on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today, 92-year-old Glenn Wine of Atwater, California, originally from El Monte in Southern California. He is a decorated Navy veteran of World War II, having served aboard two different ships. First, the attack transport USS Pierce, APA 50. And in November of 1943, you got your first taste of action at Macon Island in the Gilberts. The same day that Marines entered a bloody battle at Tarawa, you were taking soldiers from the 27th Infantry into the shores of Macon Island?
That was our main job. Otherwise, while you served as a deck officer, served your watches, we would probably not have control of the ship because we were just beginning ensigns, and we did not have the given the responsibility of the entire. Later on, we did. But our job was to carry troops, and we had what they called LCVPs, and they would carry about 36 men. So we took them into the beach. These happened to be from the Army troops on the Macon Island. Tarawa, they had Marines that landed, and then they ran into a far more difficult situation at Tarawa than what we did at Macon. Now, we had our problems there, but everything was wrapped up in about 4 days.
When you saw what happened at Tarawa, you were thankful that you were at Macon Island.
Yes. We couldn't believe how come they aren't finished, because we were.
Let's talk about yours at Macon Island. Yeah. So you were driving the Higgins boat, the LCVP?
I was in charge of a wave. Each officer had responsibility for six LCVPs that constituted a wave of boats. It was my responsibility to keep the others in circle and on timing and movement and everything, and go in so that you didn't everybody go in at once. I mean, they had to be timed.
So you were the first boat of the six to get to the shore.
You might be able to get all six in, depending on the weather, the landing conditions, as to what you could do. They would land there, and you were just responsible for those six boats. But what happened was, a disappointment to me. Each ship in our landing force there had to leave behind one officer and 10 boats to use for unloading incoming cargo ships. There were no docking facilities or anything like that. So it was our job, and we call it a boat pool. And so I was left, I use the word left, on temporary additional duty is what my orders said, to the boat pool.
So you stayed there on Macon Island for a while, but when you guys went in, did you encounter any enemy fire or anything when you first went into Macon Island?
Not really. A bit, but we did not encounter much. That was the reason it seemed so strange that they were having an endless problem at Tarawa. But I will say this, there were a lot of things that had to be learned by everybody. These Army personnel that we had were first-timers, too. They weren't veterans. The colonel who was in charge, he was killed by a sniper. They had a lot of snipers in the palm trees.
When you saw stuff like that, when you saw him gunned down, did it change things for you at all? Did it hit you at some point that, you know what, this is pretty dangerous?
I was not truly at the site when that happened.
But you heard about it, and you started to realize this stuff was happening. So were you afraid for your own life?
Not in Macon. Besides, there is a feeling that comes over you that it will never be you. You may see somebody, one of your buddies, one of your comrades, one of your fellow men that gets killed or hit or injured, but you never think it's going to happen to you. That was my thinking on it. Well, I knew the realization was that it was there, but it's going to be somebody else.
Where do you think that came from? Was that just being self-confident? Was knowing you had to be home for your wife, was that grounded in your upbringing? Where do you think that came from?
That's a good question. I don't know. I really don't know where it came from. Maybe I wasn't closely enough at that time to the actual fighting. maybe that would have instilled more of a concern in me. It might have. But we didn't. Our casualties on Macon were pretty light. They really didn't have that many.
And how long did you stay there?
2 months.
What were you doing for 2 months?
Running the boat pool, unloading cargo ships. They would come into the lagoon and tanker. Well, those atolls are often in circular conformation. They would have a gap maybe in there that a ship could get into and into the lagoon. We had CBs there that were building a fighter airstrip on the island. As they started immediately on that, one of the sites that just as graphic as can be with me right now is seeing a B-24, which had been on a previous bombing raid up to Kwajalein, which was the next group of islands. They had gone up there, whether it had been hit by some kind of anti-aircraft fire or something, I don't know. But he was disabled, and he had one landing gear, and one of his landing gear was down and extended down, and the oven was up. So he was coming into the land. He had to try to land on this fighter strip, which built out of Marston matting. They were not built for bombers in any manner, but when you're looking for a place to land, there's any port in a storm.
That's right.
And so that was what he did. And he came in so low to try to take full advantage that he clipped that landing gear that was down on the wharf that we had out there, and it just extended. Well, he did a belly landing, and then that allowed him, I mean, he was strictly belly landed in there, tore the heck out of the Marston matting strip, but he got everybody down, and I thought that was one of those sort of miracles that occasionally can happen. That was a very graphic situation that sticks with me. You say, are there certain things that stay with you? Yes, that's one of them.
Well, I want to hear about some more of them, and I don't think you ever made it back to the Pierce, did you?
I'm sorry to say, no, I did not. I was very disappointed in that. I sent a letter trying to tell BuPers, as we call it, the Bureau of Personnel, try to tell them what to do or what not to do. Is just like talking to the wind. They came back with the answer that, no, you had been dropped. I went back to Pearl Harbor, was reassigned then to the LSD-6, the Lindenwald.
LSD stands for Landing Ship Dock?
Landing Ship Dock, that's correct. Their main role was that you went along with the landing force, but you carried the medium tanks preloaded in a little larger landing craft called an LCM, and we had about 18 of them that were taken into a, we called it the well deck. It's like a dry dock. They would pump, raise or lower the ship at will and let down a big stern gate on the end, and then these preloaded LCMs could come in. And then you pumped out the water, and then we went along at the same time with the assault transports, the APAs. But it was actually a very, very useful vessel. I've laughingly, jokingly said it's outlasted the battleships. We no longer make battleships, but we still make LSDs, even today. It was a surprise because it was originally a British design, untested, really, yet it was a very helpful piece of equipment there to have, particularly in the forward areas, because with the coral conditions and everything, you had a lot of ships that get damaged and had to be repaired. Smaller craft of all kinds, that they could take in anything as large as an LSM. They could take in LCTs, but not LSTs. LSTs were too big for them. I mean, they were on their own.
Well, let's talk about what you did on the LSD. And you would make four more landings in Saipan and Leyte and the Lingayen Gulf and finally Okinawa, the last major battle in the Pacific. There's a Bronze Star on your wall that you got at Saipan, and thankfully it's framed with a citation, so I can read this. And the admiral said that this bronze star, now I'm going to read it, don't start laughing, for distinguishing himself by meritorious achievement as officer in charge of a landing craft on June 15, 1944, during the assault and capture of Saipan. Although subjected to intense enemy mortar and gunfire, he, with professional skill and outstanding leadership, caused his tank-carrying craft to be brought to the beach, thereby enabling the successful landing of the vitally needed equipment. Through his exceptional and courageous performance of duty, he contributed immeasurably to the success of the assault operation. His conduct throughout distinguished him among those performing duties of the same character. So the admiral thought you did something pretty special, but you're poo-pooing that. Why?
I was just doing my job. I wasn't doing anything special. I didn't think. True. I mean, you could see the geysers coming up all around you, all right. I mean, I grant that. But we all did that.
So you're in charge of this LCM headed to Saipan.
Right.
And the Japanese are shooting at you.
Yeah. There was a coral reef on the beach where we were supposed to go in. And we couldn't get, we couldn't get landing craft in. Similar to a situation such as they had at Tarawa.
Yeah.
But you couldn't get these tanks, such as we had on our LCMs. They couldn't go in over these conditions. We had to get them in closer to the shore, which we did. The Japs, forgive my terminology, they knew far better than we did. They'd been there and they'd been living there all this time. They knew where the openings were in that coral reef. That's where they concentrated their fire.
You're getting hit by enemy mortars and gunfire, or just all around you?
All around us. We never got hit. I can picture the geysers coming up around me, and you know, something's making those spouts of water.
So that sounds a little different from the reception you got at Macon Island. In this situation at Saipan, did you find yourself thinking, you know what? I might not make it back to see my wife again.
Now, this is an interesting thing. Some of the LCMs, including the one that I was on, were grounded on the shore in that they had damaged their, we call it a screw, the propeller, to the point there where we could not get it off. We had to, quote, abandon that ship. But we got back. There were other army ducks, as we called them.
Yeah.
It's another type of self-propelled vehicle in there, not very seaworthy, but they did, and they got us back to the ship.
So you're on the shore, and they'd been shooting at your landing craft coming in. Are they shooting at you while you're on the shore?
Not as much. We had a landing force from our ship that went ashore. They were helping with trying to keep the flow of traffic and taking care of landing craft that were damaged. We did not have to stay in the severe battle area very long. It was the intent that we not do that either. You both had to clear the beach.
You just had to deliver the tanks so they could have them for the battle.
Let me tell you one thing. We had Marine Corps personnel this time. One of the Marine officers that was there told me a story that I thought was most revealing. I told him, I said, you know, boy, you fellas really have the tough job. All we have to do is to get you into the beach, and then you've got to go ahead and do the fighting. And he says, let me tell you something. You just get me to the beach. He says, I don't like it out here on this water. He says, I don't swim. And so you just get me to the beach, and we'll be all right. And we got him to the beach. But I should tell you that man also was killed. I learned this later. So there is no real certain or given about anything. It was one of those things that I thought was kind of unique. each of us felt maybe we were in a better place than the other.
That is interesting. It's all about perspective, isn't it? We're thankful you were in the right place, and I know your 3 kids, 6 grandkids, and 8 great-grandchildren are. More to come with 92-year-old Glenn Wine, including his experiences with the infamous kamikaze attacks of the enemy. Thanks to Debbie Land of Merced for letting me know about Mr. Wine and his story, and we'll get the rest of that story when Hometown Heroes continues next after this.